Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here. And it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
Normally, being a little extra can be a bit much. But when it comes to healthcare, it pays to be extra. And United Healthcare makes it easy with Health Protector Guard fixed indemnity insurance plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they supplement your primary plan, helping you manage out-of-pocket costs without the usual requirements and restrictions like deductibles and enrollment periods. So when it comes to covering your medical bills, you can feel good about being a little extra. Visit uh1.com to find the Health Protector Guard plan for you.
Hello and welcome to On the Sporting Couch, a programme about good mental health in sport. I'm Gary Bloom, a psychotherapist, and that means I work with all sorts of people, but often sportsmen and women, who are struggling with conditions like sporting underachievement, depression, anxiety, end-of-career issues, and addictive behaviours. Meet Johnny Nelson, one of the most loved former professional boxers of our generation. He's still the longest reigning cruiserweight world champion, and was at his prime from 1999 to 2005, making 13 successful defences of his title. But his career had some troubled moments, and Johnny battled with self-doubt and depression. This episode with Johnny Nelson was recorded before the death of Johnny's mentor and trainer, Brendan Ingle. But as you'll hear, Johnny's words and stories are a fitting tribute to one of the most important figures in the history of British boxing. Would you have been as successful, not just as a boxer, but as a human being, would you have been as successful in your life if you'd never met Brendan?
No, nowhere near. And I can say that without even thinking about it for a split second. If I didn't meet Brendan, I would not be this individual today. If I didn't meet Brendan, I would not have been world champion. I wouldn't even have boxed. If I didn't meet Brendan, God knows, I'd have probably ended up like my dad, kids all over the place. If I didn't meet Brendan, my outlook, my view on life, on people, is because of Brendan. It's all because of him. Everything, certain things I say and certain things I do or how I look at things, it's because of him. And I will always give him credit, and I will feel no shame about it over anybody and everybody. Over my parents, over my wife, over my brothers and sisters, Brendan Ingle to me made me. I'm a product of Brendan Ingle, and that's what I tell everybody. I'm a product of Brendan Ingle.
There's a lot about Brendan in your book.
Yeah.
If you were to sum him up to somebody who'd never heard of him, and who maybe doesn't know boxing very well, how would you describe him, and how would you put into context his influence on your life?
From whatever you do, you don't have to be a sportsman or woman. You look at Brendan Ingle, you check, look at what he's achieved. You'll see all these world champions, European and British champions that he's achieved. That is the tip of the iceberg. The people that he helps just to be adults, be parents, be responsible individuals, to educate themselves. You've no idea. There was a kid that you came in the gym once, and he had a bad stutter and he used to blink all the time. His parents brought him in. He used to get picked on a lot at school. And Brendan said, leave him with me. Now, this kid was probably 13, 14 years old. He said, leave him with me. But the only rule is, I don't want you coming in the gym. You stay at the door. So you drop him off, let him come in. So every day, Brendan's got this kid to go on the lines. And to get
Explain what the lines are
in the gym. So the lines are, there's some lines painted on the floor in the gym. So Brendan devised these lines and to basically get your footwork together, to work on your footwork. So to create hand-foot-eye coordination. And so you'd have to do the lines for two hours at least before you did anything. For 2 weeks, solid. So doing the lines, doing your footwork, is like walking, it's like talking. He wants you to be able to do your footwork in boxing without even thinking about it. So it becomes natural. You can box southpaw, you can box orthodox, you can dip, you can slip, you can do everything without even thinking about it. It's like normal people on the street walking. They walk, they don't think about how they're walking. They just do it naturally. And that's what the lines create. And so in doing that, it helps your motor skills. It helps your the left side of your brain work as well as the right side of your brain. It helps you get your timing and everything in coordination. So this young man that came into the gym, Brendan had him doing all these things, working on the lines, talking, singing in the ring where everybody was there, talking to the wall, you know, to build up his confidence on the lines time after time after time after time after time. Within 6 months, all the docs that he'd been to, all the people he'd spoken to, the teachers, adults and everything couldn't help this kid. Within 6 months, his stutter had gone. His blink had gone. His confidence had built up. He now, he ended up going to university, qualifying at university. This kid is a perfect example of the simplicity of the Winker Bank gym. The Winker Bank gym, as you know, the buzzword at the moment is multiculturalism. Our gym has been multiculturalized for years before it was even a buzzword. You know, we had black, whites, Asians, girls, boys in the gym, everybody working together. And that's through Brendan's idea.
But I would argue that what Brendan has put into that gym and all those boxes, four-letter word, love.
Yeah, I completely agree with it. And I mean love, and there's been a price. Because I always said to myself, I don't want to be a trainer. I don't want to be a manager. And Brendan said, why? I said, because when I met you, you had a thick head of black hair. Then it went grey. Now you're bald. You've got a wife, 5 kids at home. You've got 200 kids in the gym. And you're not just dealing with the kids. You're dealing with their issues outside the gym. So you're dealing with their parents. Because as many times Brendan would go into the gym, have to leave the gym, go to a kid's house because there's trouble in his house with his parents because of someone on the estate. And I said, Brendan, I don't know how you do it. And that's why I could never do what you did, because unless I can give the commitment what you've given, I think anything else is I'm cheating. So I don't think I'd have ended up doing what I'm doing without that commitment from Brendan. So unless I can do what Brendan did and give the same amount of love, same amount of commitment, then I'm cheating. I'm cheating the individuals that I'm helping or supposed to be helping. But Brendan gave his life to these people.
Let's go back to the very start. Johnny Nelson, that's not your name. I'm always fascinated by people who leave their old names behind because I always wonder about identity. Where's your identity?
Well, in a lot of West Indian households, most of the kids that come out of the house, it's not the house name. So my house name is Ivanson Rani Nelson. And so that's that. But I can't ever remember actually being called that. And so I remember my first day at school. I can remember it clear as day. And I was a bit of a teary kid. If an adult spoke to me, I'd start to cry. I'd just get all nervous. So if I was in a foreign environment, if I wasn't around my mum or my brothers and sisters, I was just a nervy kid. And I'd just start to cry. So when I went to school, I can remember the teacher, Mrs. Leahy, it was St. Vincent's School, Holly's Cross in Sheffield. Mrs. Leahy, she was one of the teachers there. The school was a Catholic school, so the headmistress was a nun. There was a few nun teachers, but you got some people that weren't of the church teaching. So Mrs. Leahy, on the first day, she said, she did a register, you know, introducing everybody. She said, right then, and we have Iverson. And like all the kids looked, I'm thinking it's Ivanson, not Iverson. And she kept saying Ivanson, so I said, no, it's Ivanson. So the kids are laughing, and she's like trying to get the name right. But I think she was just trying to make me feel relaxed, to make me laugh. But I started going, bottom lip started going and everything. And so she thinks, I could, now I'm old, I can understand what she was doing. She said, I'll tell you what, let's just give him another name just for today until everybody gets used to calling his name. So because it was a Catholic school, we went through the apostles, Matthew, Luke, Peter, John, everybody. So we had them all in the class. We had about 4 Johns in the class. Her son was called Morris. Morris put his hand up and said, let's call him Morris. And I'm like, really? And so, no. One of the kids said, let's call him Johnny. We had four Johns in class. So kids, I don't know why we knew what a Johnny was at that time. And, you know, the kids would giggle, Johnny. And so she's thinking, oh, they like the name Johnny. And so she said, yes, let's call him Johnny, just for class. And it picked up from there. But all the time through school, the kids would be running up to me saying, can I borrow your rubber, Johnny? So it was a joke. But I can never remember being called Ivanson at home.
But there's one person who still calls you Ivanson.
My old man, my biological father. He called me Ivanson.
But you were brought up by your mum's partner called Benji, and he proved to be a very strong father figure.
Without a doubt. Maximum respect to Benji. Benji took on my mum and her kids.
There was a few of them, wasn't
there? And a few of us, yeah. So there was six of us. Then Oliver popped up, his son. And my mum and Benji took us all on. And Benji, he worked in the steel grinding factory in the mills in Sheffield. The work, when it came in, it was good. When it wasn't, you know, he wasn't working, but he took care of us all. That's who I class as dad. That's who I class as my father. That's the man that was there and took me on and took care of me, put food on the table. He'd race me in the street sometimes, the good times and the bad times. He's the one that I class as my dad.
Well, I'm going to say you had two. In fact, I think you had three dads.
Yeah.
You had Brendan. You had your biological father, James. And you've got Benji. So what now? This is getting interesting in a therapeutic sense. What is the effect for you of having three, well, certainly two strong father figures, and then a third one joins when you're about 30 years old?
Well, I can remember the crossover. Now, in regards to my biological father, I don't really include him. I'm indifferent. I don't dislike him. I don't like him. He's all right. He's just a gentleman that he impregnated my mum, and that was it. I don't know him.
Okay, well, let's look at the relationship between Benji and Brendan.
Right.
Brendan,
Benji's my dad, bringing me through, and then I started boxing. Now, in our household, anyway, they were straight talkers. If you could do something, you were good. If you're rubbish, you say you're rubbish. And so I wasn't a great boxer, you know. And
he didn't even like boxing.
I didn't like boxing. I had 13 amateur fights. I only won three. So Benji'd say you're rubbish. Why are you boxing? That's my dad. He's telling me I'm rubbish. But Brendan could see what the issue was then. And so when Brendan said to me once, I want you to do me a favour. I said, what? He said, tell your dad he can't come to your fights. And I thought, what? This is the crossover now. This is the baton now. So I'm thinking, I can't say to him you can't come to the fights because Brendan didn't want you to come to the fights. Brendan didn't want him to come to the fights because he thought his negative influence in regards to saying you're rubbish didn't help matters. My dad, Benji, wasn't being bad. He was just saying how it is. He's just, you're rubbish, Johnny. I know what's rubbish. But for me to grow and get better, him telling me that is hindering it. He's pulling it back. So Brendan said, I don't want you to bring him to the fights. And I know it's hard, but that's what I need to do.
We're going to go right to the heart of the matter, because I think what Benji felt was what he could see, and he's got a great relationship with you, Benji. He could see fear.
Yeah.
And fear is right at the heart of your story. Mm. Brendan felt he could work with that and turn you into an outstanding boxer. But Benji, I wonder whether Benji got upset thinking you're going to get hurt. And that was projected onto you.
Yeah, probably. You know what? Now you're saying that, I'm thinking, I've never actually thought about it that way. And he could see that was scared. He could see I didn't want to fight. I can remember boxing in Derby once, and Benji came to the show. And that was the time when Brendan said, don't bring him anymore. And I boxed, and me and the guy that were fighting each other, neither of us wanted to hit each other. And so we were like tapping, grabbing, and the other kid won. And as we were walking out, Benji said, you're rubbish. Why are you boxing? You shouldn't box. You're scared. So, but his delivery was just, it wasn't sugar-coated. He just told me, look, you're not good. You can't box.
Subscribe to this podcast on your podcast app and never miss an episode.
But when we spoke on the phone last week, you came up with a great line, if you don't mind me saying so, Johnny. You said, I mistook nerves for fear.
Yes.
Say a bit more about
and
that.
To understand that, you've got to go through, I always say to people, to get wisdom, you've got to go through experiences, good and bad experiences. So when good things are happening to you, it's great. When you're going through bad experiences, people are saying, why me? You've got to go through those things to get wisdom. And that's why I can explain this now at my age. I can explain this once I became world champion, because the penny dropped. And so I understood that, because when I had to assess myself and look at thought, why am I scared? What am I nervous? What's worrying me? I had to go deep inside and think, right, what was it?
What was upsetting you? What was worrying you? And what you said to me, and I'm going to go even deeper than this, what you said to me, I was frightened of getting hurt.
Yeah.
But why would you be a boxer?
Exactly. But I'd ask myself the same question. What I would do is, when I'd be sent away as a sparring partner, and I'd be bricking it in the hotel or bedsit, wherever I was, I'd be panicking, thinking, why am I doing this? Why didn't I pick football? Why didn't I pick golf? Why didn't I pick boxing? And I'd be terrified. And I'd be walking across to the gym thinking, oh, my God, why did I do this? Absolutely terrified. And so I thought, well, what are you scared of? Think about it. Break it down. So I thought, I'm scared of getting hit because it'll hurt. If it hurts, I'm going to get my nose broken. I'm going to get my teeth knocked out. I'm going to get knocked out. That's going to hurt. And this is what this. So I had to break it down to think, what are you actually scared of?
I'm going to play a game with you. It's a psychological game, and I've done this with many clients. And it's called a down the stairs game.
Mm.
And it goes like this. Okay, you're frightened of getting hurt, physically hurt, because if you were physically hurt or you got your nose broken or a teeth broke, then what?
Could get killed.
You could get killed. Yeah. And that was that. Then that is a.
That was there. All these things were there.
So did you think, even when you were sparring in Germany, when you were sparring partners, did you think, I'm going into this ring and I might never climb out of it?
Yes. Yes, I did.
How old was that fear?
That fear was from being a youngster, from being an amateur. That even before I boxed. I couldn't fight. I could cause trouble, but I couldn't back it up. And I always thought something's going to happen. Bad's going to happen to me. I'm going to get hurt here. I thought I was a coward. And I had no shame in telling people, you know, I was a coward. But then I had to understand that it wasn't fear, it was nerves. And I just didn't know how to deal with my nerves. Some people, when they get nervous, they sweat profusely or they go red or they get clammy. My heart flutters. I think, God, what's... My legs start to shake and I just didn't know how to deal with it. So I thought that was fear. And it wasn't until I made fear my friend... And I understood, it wasn't fear, it was nerves, and nerves are good. You know, it's human nature, it's a natural instinct.
I would argue that the fear of dying is quite an odd one for a very young man.
Yeah.
And I'm wondering where that comes from, to be honest, because normally we have fears of dying when we get to middle age and we see our contemporaries getting ill and dying. A fear of dying when you're very young, Johnny, that's quite unusual.
Yeah, it is. I, you know, when I was younger, and when I look back, I think, why was you thinking that as a kid? I wish I knew where the fear came from, but I always remember being anxious and fearful when I was younger. But was it fear or was it nerves, which I classed as the fear? And that's the issue.
Well, this gets taken into the ring with you, and I'm going to take you to what you might say the best night of your life and the worst night of your life when you fight De Leon for the first time at a world title fight. It ends in a draw. He keeps his title and you're booed off the stage. Now, I watched the YouTube video of this this week, and you talked about, yes, I own the fact I was a coward.
Yeah.
When you look at your interviews after that fight, it's all a front. It's all a defence.
Complete front.
And I thought, I don't believe any of this.
A complete front. Even when I watch the fight itself, I want to reach into the screen and slap that kid in his face and say, fix up. Now, this might sound really weird and odd. So I used to dream a hell of a lot. A hell of a lot. And so when it came to that De Leon fight, and I dream like the results of fights, and I tell Brendan, and Brendan say, just don't tell anybody. And I was right. And it came to the De Leon fight, and I had a dream that... The referee had my hand up in the middle of the ring after the fight. I looked across at De Leon and he was smiling. And there was a guy in a pinstripe suit, a white guy with a pinstripe suit and an afro, sticking two fingers up. This was my dream that I told Brendan about days before. And I'm thinking, oh my God. And this was that kind of intuition that I had. And when you tell people this, you think, yeah, whatever. That's my truth. That's what happened with me. And that's how that used to happen to me a hell of a lot when I was a youngster.
But I would suggest that the dreams, and Freud called dreams the right royal road to the unconscious, was you tapping into your unconscious mind, knowing that you were going into a world title fight as a coward.
Yeah.
And you knew you could not win. Because even if you had won, there would be something about your psyche, your personality, which would have said, it's just another front.
You are spot on 100%. I knew when I got the crack for the world title, I thought I was going to get exposed because I remember when I started boxing, I didn't want to fight. I just did it because my friends did it. And then I started to beat people as a professional fighter. And I didn't think I was good. I just thought they weren't. And that's how I looked at it. I didn't think I was good. I just thought they were not good. I just think they were not very good. So therefore, when I beat them and won the British title and won the Central Era title, and when I beat these people, I didn't think you're good, Joe, and it didn't build up my confidence. I just thought, he was rubbish, you've done well there. I've hustled my way through to this point of being champion. But when I come across somebody that can fight, I'm going to get exposed. And so when it came to the chance to fight Carlos De Leon, former world champion, he was number one in the world for many, many years from Puerto Rico. When he came out, when I was fighting him, I thought, this is my day of reckoning. I'm going to get exposed here. Am I going to get lucky and be able to hustle my way through this? I'm going to get exposed. I boxed Carlos De Leon. The rest is history. But I now know if I'd have won that fight, I'd have loft it into my first defence or second defence because I was a boy in a man's body. I couldn't deal with responsibility. I couldn't deal with that kind of pressure. And my life would have panned out completely differently because I couldn't deal with it. My outlook was I looked at things wrong.
And these were dark days after that fight.
Oh, my goodness. Years later, I look back and say it was the best thing that happened. But at that time, it was the worst thing that happened because I went into, which I now recognise as depression, because I was getting ridiculed. I was getting mocked everywhere I went. And I don't mean just in the papers. When you see those caricature cartoons in the paper, they did them about me. You know, taking the mickey about me, calling me a coward. And I'd be walking, I can remember walking into a restaurant with my girlfriend at the time and two big burly guys walking out and they saw me and they started saying, yeah, did you see how Johnny Nelson fight the other night? What a chicken. It was a bit blue, the language. And they were saying it loud enough for me to hear. And so when we're walking down the passageway to get into the restaurant, these guys barged past me and I'm with my girlfriend. I thought, but I'm getting it everywhere. And I told Bren, I said, Bren, it's still me. I didn't. What shall I do? He said, Johnny, you can't fight everybody. You cannot fight everybody. Swallow it. And then he started telling me about Floyd Patterson and Inge Johansson. The same thing happened to him back in the years where for the world heavyweight title. He said, it's the same story, different actors. You've got to grow up.
So when I say the words to you, Johnny, at that age, you were chicken. What goes on inside you?
At the time, I probably was, because I didn't want to face things. I buried my head in the sand.
Because you were frightened of dying in the ring?
Yeah, I was scared. I was scared of getting hurt, ridiculed, dying. I was scared.
There's just something that really, really perturbs me about the whole thing, about your story.
Yeah.
And I go back to something I've already said, that if I had that fear, if I had an irrational fear, and it's not an irrational fear to, you know, bearing in mind what you're doing, I would never get in a ring. Mm. If I had an irrational fear of dying in a car crash, I just wouldn't drive.
Yeah.
If I had an irrational fear of lightning, I wouldn't go out on a golf course when it was thunder and lightning. But you put yourself in harm's way twice, three times, four times a year. It doesn't add up.
Exactly. And I'd have the same conversation with myself. Why am I doing this? And there was something holding me there to say, Johnny, I kind of knew that if I didn't get through this, if I couldn't handle this, it would affect every aspect of my life. So I had to get hold of this. Because boxing isn't just about getting in the ring and fighting somebody. It mirrors life. How you deal with things, how you deal with pressures, how you deal with individuals, how you deal with yourself, how you're honest with yourself. So I knew if I didn't get over this, I would then come into a situation where I could be at work. Be confronted. I could be in the street being confronted, and I can't deal with it. So I had to get over this, but I hated it. I can remember saying, why don't I pick something else? What are you doing here? And listen, there was times when I got offered two jobs. And remember, I'm a loser. I'm not one. I've lost more fights than I've won. I've got offered two decent jobs where I got a company car. I'd get a salary of about 20 grand a year back then. And I said, I turned him down. I said, no, I'm going to stick to the boxing. Even though I had this fear in my head, even though I thought to myself, nah, if I do that, I can't train as much. I can't commit myself to the boxing as much. I was rubbish. I fell on my path in life. And to me, boxing doesn't I don't distinguish myself from boxing. I think boxing was just a step in my life. I don't identify myself through the boxing. I actually like the fact that people have actually forgotten I boxed. And you say, well, he works on Sky. And it makes me smile and say, well, I'm doing a good job then.
Because what you're saying to me is boxing was the medicine that cured the fear.
Without a doubt. Without a doubt. I've been scared. I've been nervous. I've won. I've lost. I've drawn. I've been ridiculed. I've been a winner. And so I've seen every aspect of life. And it's not just what's happened in the ring. It's what's happened outside the ring that's made me.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Cats and cat owners deserve better than any old-fashioned litter. That's why I teamed up with scientists and veterinarians to create Pretty Litter. Its innovative crystal formula has superior odor control and weighs up to 80% less than clay litter. Pretty Litter even monitors health by changing colors to help detect early signs of potential illness. It's the world's smartest kitty litter.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here. And it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
There's never been a faster or easier way to start your weight loss journey than with PlushCare. PlushCare accepts most insurance plans and gives you online access to board-certified physicians who can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Take charge of your health and speak with a board-certified physician about a weight loss plan that's right for you. Get started today at PlushCare.com/weightloss. That's PlushCare.com/weightloss. PlushCare.com/weightloss.
On the Sporting Couch with Gary Bloom. Find more podcasts from TalkSport at TalkSport.com/podcasts or by searching for TalkSport in the podcast store.
Let's add something else into the mixing bowl and the issue of racism. How important was it that you are not only a coward at that age, but a black man and a coward? And you're smiling.
Because...
what does it mean?
In my hometown, when... so I was just not just getting classed as a coward. I was getting cussed. I was getting...
racially abused?
No, I was getting it from my own people.
But you can still be racially, abused.
No, and they were basically saying, you're embarrassing me. You know,
you're an embarrassment to black people.
That's what I'm saying. And I'm thinking, what? And so they're talking to me like I'm useless. I'm thinking, you try it. So I go into black environments like a blues, or I go into a club, and they're like, what are you boxing for? I'm getting it from I got it from my dad. You can't fight. You're a chick. So these guys, instead of backing me up, they're giving me as much grief as anybody else. So it wasn't about black, white. It was about if I was good or bad, and that was it. And I got it everywhere. And then it actually followed me in my career. So every time I boxed after the De Leon fight, that's what they referred to. The De Leon fight, Johnny Nelson, you know, he's got no bottle. He's a coward. He's whatever. He's boring. And I used to get it all the time. And so I became thick skinned because I got it from everybody else. And Brendan said to me, listen, don't take what people say personal unless they know you personally. Because you might have a perception of somebody on the TV, in the newspaper, but you don't know them. And so the hard thing is, when you're in the public eye, you've got to be thick-skinned enough to be able to ignore, and it's not easy because it breaks a lot of people, to ignore what people say, good and bad. Because when they say good things about you, it's great to big up your chest and say, that's me. But is it true? And bad, you know, it knocks your confidence down.
But how damaging was it for you to be rejected by your own community, by your own people?
It hurt because you... it hurt because I had nowhere to run to, nowhere to feel safe. The only place I felt safe was in the gym. So I became a gym rat. I was always in the gym.
You say you started to grow up around the age of 21, 22. What took you from that fight to De Leon, yourself confessed as a coward, to a point where you regain a world title 9 years later. Tell me about that nine-year period. How did you mature? What happened to you?
Before I boxed Carlos De Leon, I had so many friends, so-called friends, that came out of the woodwork. And people, you were being so nice to me. And then within 24 hours, I saw a change in people. Those same people that were really nice to me and really helpful switched on me in a heartbeat. And I mean, they didn't even hide it. And so I saw people being nasty, being horrible, being cruel, being insulting. And I thought, and it just threw me back. And I thought, human nature, I thought, people can be horrible. I can remember one guy, he owned a double glazing factory. And he said, oh, I'm going to do your house up when you finish. And he's saying, oh, I'm going to have a party at my house and everything. So after your fight, come up and we'll get it all sorted out. So in my mum's house, because my only dream was to buy my mum's house. So, and that was it. That's all I wanted to do, buy my mum's house so she was all right. And so he said, I'm going to put double glazing in your mum's house. I'm this, that, and the other. I thought, great. After the De Leon fight, the next day, I'm like, because this guy said, come up the day after. I said, oh, you're all right. He went, what do you want? I said, you watched your fight last night. Fight? That wasn't a fight. You were crap. I had people around me. I said, how embarrassing. And he went, and he said it straight. He said, you know you're not getting anything out of me, don't you? So from being really nice and polite and respectful, they just turned. And that was just one example. And I got it from left, right and centre. I had a handful of friends and they are my same friends now. And that whittled out all of them. So from fighting the De Leon fight to see the switch of human nature, see how horrible people can be, I then had to go on the road because I couldn't even get fights in England. People didn't want to put me on the shows. So Brendan sent me away as a sparring partner because he said, you need to grow up. You're a boy in a man's body, you need to grow up. So as a sparring partner, I'd go to East Germany when they still had those little yellow Trabant cars to France, to everywhere. And they didn't take care of you. You'd be in a dirty little, grotty little bedsit, like a piece of meat. And then you'd have to go to the gym at like 3 o'clock in the afternoon to spar. And their job was to beat you up. You were getting paid to get beat up. So you're like a hooker. And so the other 22, 23, 20, 21 hours of the day, you were left to your own devices. And so you had no TV in your room. You couldn't speak the language. You couldn't really do anything and go out and do any excursions because you had to get to the gym. And so it was horrible. It was the worst time. But I knew, and they give you a ticket. So I used to train in Frankfurt Oder on the border of Poland. They give you a ticket, 6-week ticket. So you fly out there to Berlin. Someone pick you up at Berlin Airport, drive you a few hours to Frankfurt Oder. And then you were there for 6 weeks. If I wanted to go home early, I had to find my way to Berlin, change my ticket and buy a completely new ticket because I'm contracted to stay there for 6 weeks. So many people, what they do is they do it. They say, I'm going home. It was horrible. But to me, it was the best thing now because it made me learn discipline, gave me confidence. It made me believe I was actually better than I actually realised I was. I'd be sparring with world champions, guys that were multi-decorators and amateurs. These guys were superstars in Germany. And I'd be beating them up in sparring.
They didn't like it, did they?
And they didn't. Oh, they hated it. There was a trainer there. They used to call me Hollywood because I'd phone Brendan every night, go on the pay phone, say, Brendan, tell him what's happened. He said, listen. He said, get in there, smile, laugh, be polite. And I report to him how the sparring's gone. He said, don't get hurt, hit and run, get out of the way, learn, watch, ride the shots. They hated it. And I got friendly with one guy called Axel Schultz. He was he boxed George Foreman for the world heavyweight title. And Axel was a nice guy. And he used to kind of tell me what they were saying. And he said, these guys are racist. You know, be careful. You know, because they say a lot of stuff that was really, really bad, really disrespectful. I didn't know what he was saying. But I kept going back.
I don't understand how you can get in a sparring ring 6 weeks at a time as a black man with
Uwe, in East Germany
yeah, with racists and stick it out. To me, that sounds like a prison sentence.
It was. It was like being in prison. It was. Let me tell you a little story about the first time I went there to in Frankfurt Oder. I got there and I thought this bedsit I was in, it was open to everybody. Now, it was one of those places where workers came in from out of Germany and they worked there Monday to Friday. So I got there on the Monday. So you'd go in for breakfast downstairs. Then you go down. Then you go for lunch after training. It got to Friday, and I thought, I'm not really hungry after I got back from training. I thought, I'll get a big breakfast Saturday morning. So I went down to walk into the kitchen, and the kitchen was shut. I thought, it probably opens a bit later. Wait till 12 o'clock, it was still shut. I'm thinking, what? I'm starving. It was closed all day. Nobody was in. So basically, everybody had gone home. The workers had gone home, and they locked the place up. So I couldn't even get out of the building. I was like the only person in, and they had these metal shutters on the doors, so you couldn't get out. And I'm thinking, oh my God, now. So I've not eaten Friday afternoon, not eaten all day Saturday. Sunday morning, I got up, my belly's rumbling. I'm thinking, I'm starving here. I can't get. And they said, don't walk the streets, because they had skinheads that were driving around saying, they'll get you, be careful. But I was starving. And so I'm looking out of the window of my room, and in the distance, I can see pear trees and apple trees. I'm starving. I'm three floors up. And I thought, I don't care. So I put my tracksuit on, Adidas retro tracksuit. It was a green one. You know, so can you imagine, you're driving your little Travan, you see a big 6'3" black guy climbing down a drain pipe in a lime green tracksuit. And that was me. Run across one garden, jumped over the fence, jumped over another fence, climbed up the tree, put all these apples and pears down my tracksuit top, climbed back over the fence again, climbed up the drain pipe back in my room. That was my food. And I just thought, I'm not doing that again, you know.
But all this served you well, because 9 years after that fight with De Leon, you get back in the ring with a chance of a world championship. Yeah. You meet Carl Thompson. But you're ready for that fight, aren't you? You've done your homework and you're not frightened anymore.
The time away in Germany was the best thing that happened, because I learned about myself. I asked myself all the questions. I went through this fear, nerves thing. And I had to understand what it was, because you're on your own. You're stuck with it. When you close your eyes, the only person you can't lie to is yourself. So all these questions, all these things that are making you nervous, making you feel uncomfortable, you're having this conversation with yourself. And so that helped me. Even though I hated going, I'd keep going back. And it helped me, that time on my own out there. So then I knew when it's time to come back, I knew I would never lose in the ring again, because I knew what I was achieving. Because I'd spar with guys and I'd beat them up, and I'd be walking back to my dirty little bedsit, and they'd jump in a stretch limousine and drive off to the big house. I'm thinking, our picture's wrong, I've just beat him up. And so my confidence was getting there. I started to believe I'm actually good here. So when it came to boxing Carl Thompson, I knew, and you call it arrogance, I knew no matter what, he had not been walked my shoes. He had not been where I'd been. He'd not been through the hard times, the bad times, the rough times, the skin. He'd not been there. So I thought I deserved success. I deserved to win, because I've done all the work. So for one second did I think he could beat me. Even though everybody said, and guys in my own gym said, Johnny, you know, Carl Thompson's a tough fight. You know, do you think you can really beat him? Because he was knocking people out. I used to be a fan of his. And I thought, I'll never lose again. I just knew. That was something I knew. I would never lose again in the ring, because I knew I'd done everything. I'd covered every aspect. You know, and it wasn't just about training your body. It's about training your mind. Your mind is as important as training your body. So you can train, and your body would be 100% on point. If your mind's not there, you might as well not train one day. So, if your mind's strong and you've not trained strong in your body, your mind will get you through so many things. So your mind is your biggest enemy, your biggest critic, but it's your biggest hero as well. So once you've got control of that, it helps you in every aspect in life.
Johnny, what would you say to people who are listening to this broadcast and saying, I'm struggling, I'm in a dark place at the moment, I'm tempted to go down a violent path? What would you say to them?
Your mind, your mind is your strength and your weakness. Your mind is, you need to understand, you are not the only person that has had this conversation with themselves. You are not the only person that thinks, it's just happening to me. This happens to many, many people. So when you see people in the street, they might be laughing, they might be joking or whatever, or they might be doing whatever they're doing. We all have issues upstairs. We all have issues. Some people are more in control of it than others. So people that are thinking that way, they need to understand, in that same mind, what's taking them down this dark path is success, is a better way. It's how you think, it's how you control your mind, how you discipline your mind. Training your mind is as important as training your body. And I'm telling you now, you are your own strength, but you're your worst enemy. And it's not just happening to you.
Subscribe to this podcast on your podcast app and never miss an episode.
I wish I'd have had loads of kids.
Tell me about your children.
I've got three daughters, Jordan, India and Bailey. And everybody said, do you not want a boy? My girls, you know, as far as I'm concerned, they can be loving. I know for a fact I'm the taxi driver stroke cash machine, but I'm the dad.
What does it mean to be a dad?
It's important. It's important to me because, and listen, there's no handbook to tell you if you're a good dad or a bad dad. I've made mistakes. And there's no handbook to tell you how to be a father. And I've learned from those mistakes. But to me, I just think my girls, as far as I'm concerned, are my family, are me, are my stability, are my, no matter where they are in the world, no matter where I am in the world, they're a part of me. That's me. And so to me, my stability growing up used to be the boxing gym. Now I don't box anymore. I can be with any woman in the world. I can be with and live in any house in the world. My stability is my family. My family is my three daughters. Because your wife can leave you, your girlfriend can leave you, but your daughters are yours. And they've got I have unconditional love for them as they do for me. Even the days when they don't like me, it's unconditional. They belong to me.
I'm going to take you back to a dark hour more recently. And that's when you discover a kidnap plot. Mm. And that's the time that I imagine those fears about your own death or the death of a close one, your wife or your kids, starts attacking you. Mm. Tell me how you dealt with that.
Right. So the story goes, the police rang me. I was driving to the gym one day. They rang me and said, is it Mr. Nelson? Yes, it is. We need to have a word with you. I said, well, I'm just going to the gym. What's it about? It's a bit delicate. Can we meet at your house? So I said, yeah, but I'm going to the gym now, so you'll have to meet me afterwards. And I gave him my address on the phone. It could have been anybody. I'm that stupid and naive. I gave him my address. So I got home and I said to my wife, the police rang me. They want to have a word with me about something. She said, what? I don't know. She said, so when they're talking to me, I said, they're on the way up. She said, you gave him my address. Oh, oops. Yeah. She said, how did you know it was the police? Oh, well, I didn't. Anyway, the police came in. And they said they've discovered a plot to kidnap me. And this gang, they'd been following this gang for a while. And when they'd been following this gang for a while, this information had come out. So they want to see, they wanted to ask me if I would let them tag me and my family and my home to catch these perpetrators, to catch them. Because there's nothing you can really do with the information. This is only confidence. But when they try it, they've got him. So they're either going to get him for the drugs they've been involved in that they were following for or attempted kidnap. There's nothing I could do about it. Because if I said no, these guys are still out there, still attempting to.
I've got two questions to ask you. One, you know who that person was, yeah. And you've told me off air who that person was.
I didn't at first, though.
I know, but now you do. What would you do if you met that person again?
I have met that person again. And it's upsetting because I know that individual. It's upsetting because that individual clearly didn't think about the knock-on effect that he put in my head, because they're my children. I wasn't scared for me. I was scared for my kids, you know, because straight away it's like standing in front of a car for your kids. I was scared for my kids. So I thought...
You didn't fear for your own life, Johnny?
I did, but my kids... took over that. You know, they were the ones I thought, well, as long as they're all right, you do what you have to do to me. You know, and then when I realised who it was, I thought, really? But then it wasn't him that was the issue. It was the people that were hired with the issue, because I didn't know how far these people would go or what they would do. So then all of a sudden, I'm angry because I'm threatened. You back a dog in a corner, he's going to bite. And so I'm threatened and I'm scared. And so my kids had to sleep in my room, my bedroom. We had tags in the house on our clothes and the car. We were followed everywhere for 6 months. You know, I didn't see the police following me, but they were following me. A helicopter would fly over my house in the morning and at night. They'd phone my house twice a day in the morning, at night, and say, are the dogs in? That was a password. If I said the dogs are out, this is how bad it was. And I thought, this is wrong. And I was scared, but I was angry more than scared.
You see, this is where we come full circle, Johnny, because we go back to that little boy who's frightened of being harmed, and it comes right up to date with this kidnap gang who are after you. And that's what I'm trying to draw out of you. Were you scared? Were you angry? Were you frightened of losing your life again?
Well, but in saying that, you remember, you've asked me, why did you carry on boxing? Why did you carry on boxing at times when you're in the dressing room? So again, you know, it was it might be ignorance or whatever, but I was angry because I thought, you can't do this to me. It's not fair.
But you can get in the ring and box, Johnny. Yeah. You can get away from that fear. You can actually do it. You can spar. It's a lot harder to get away from a criminal gang.
And there was something inside me that even though I was scared and angry, instinctively, I wanted to protect my own. I wanted to, and you were looking over your shoulder thinking, where's it coming from? So now I am scared. I'm talking with my shoulders up, my head down. I am scared. But I just think, and now, because I've been through things, I'm thinking, what is the worst thing that can happen? If they're going to take me out, I'm going to make sure I'm taking somebody out with me. Because this, so you're thinking these things, you're thinking the worst things. And then you think about your kids. And my kids had no idea why they were sleeping in my bedroom. The kids had no idea why there was always a man sat across from the school in the car. And so there was only a few people I could tell. I had to tell the head teacher at their school, because they didn't phone the police to say there's a man watching the school. I had to tell Brendan, because I said to Brendan, look, this is the issue. Brendan was heartbroken, absolutely heartbroken. I didn't tell anybody else.
So, Johnny, how did the kidnapping saga end?
Well, the individuals that were hired to do the job ended up getting arrested for what they were originally being followed for, which were the drugs. And none of them would actually put their hand up and say, yeah, we were paid £7,000 to follow Johnny Nelson, find his movements out and pick him up. Nobody put their hand up for that because it carried a hefty sentence. So they got locked up for the drugs. And the individual that paid them, the police have said the case has been left open, because if evidence comes where they can prosecute the individual, they will do to this day.
I'd like to quote you the last couple of lines of your autobiography. Somewhere out there is a new career that will give me the rush again. Now, your autobiography is 5-6 years old. All I've got to do is find it. Mm. Have you found it?
No. I actually, some people's goal is to be a British champion, be a European champion, be a world champion, unify the titles. It's never been my goal. I achieved these things and I thought, is that it? I want more.
What is your goal then?
And so, you might be in a job and you love your job and you think, this is what I want to do. This is me. I like this. My thirst hasn't been quenched. It wasn't boxing. Boxing was a stepping stone in my life.
So you're still looking for yourself?
Yeah, I'm looking for that something that quenches my thirst. All right.
Were you with a therapist? Let's go for it. Give me a flavour of what makes you really happy. When is Johnny Nelson absolutely content? What is he doing?
Now, when I'm content, I'm happy in the gym. I've got food in my cupboard. I've got family around me.
But you're saying you're happiest when you're in a gym with other boxers who are sparring and training.
Or training, just exerting myself.
You know what my next question will be? Why aren't you a trainer?
Because I wouldn't be fair. I couldn't commit myself like Brendan did.
But you don't have... This is an interesting one here, because what you're describing is what therapists call a catastrophic way of thinking. It has to be black or white. Mm. You don't have to be Brendan, but you might be good enough, Johnny, to be a very, very good trainer.
You know, I believe I could be, but...
Why do you have to be the best?
I don't have to be the best, but I have to be able to give that commitment like Brendan did.
What's stopping you committing?
One, because I saw the stress and the pressure it put Brendan through. Brendan gave his life to boxing. And so if I'm willing to do that, sacrifice... Because he's told me about when he's been skint, he's had no money. He's told me about when he's had to... work a job and then go into the gym and deal with everybody's issues and deal with his wife and kids and everything. And I say, Brendan, you know, why would you do that? You know, it's a lot to handle. He was made for that.
Yeah, but it's his love. Yeah. It's his love for the world. And what I'm trying to ask you, maybe unsuccessfully, is where is your love for the world?
I would probably love doing that. But I've always got the fear of, how am I going to pay my bills? I don't want someone to turn my lights off. I don't want somebody to, I don't want to, I want to be secure. I want to be financially secure so I can do that. But I'm not. I know when I'm 51 years old now. So what happens when I'm 55? What happens when I'm 60? My money won't last forever. I've still got to earn a crust. A happy Johnny is not having to worry about that. Then I can be like Brendan was.
But you've got your work in the prisons, yeah. You've got your work in the schools, you've got your work on Sky TV as a boxing commentator. People still want Johnny Nelson. Mm. What does Johnny Nelson want?
I want to be like Brendan. I do want to be like Brendan. But I know I can't at the moment because I can't commit like Brendan did. And I said to him, Brendan, I will never do what you did because I can't commit like you have. And I admire him. I admire what he's done. I admire how he's dealt with people. I admire how he's helped people's lives. You know, and I could do that. I'm good at motivating people. I'm good at talking to kids. I'm good at telling people stories. You go through life to pass that wisdom on. I can do that. But right now I can't do that because if I tried that financially, what am I going to do? How am I going to live? Brendan did this out of the love of his heart. Brendan did this out of people giving him handouts to say, there you are, Bren, that'll help you out. You know, he was just fortunate enough to come across a few fighters that made him money and he was all right. And then he took the pressure off and he loved his job. I'm not in that position.
You've been listening to On the Sporting Couch, a programme that's attempted to lift the lid on mental health issues in sport. I'm Gary Bloom, a psychotherapist, counsellor and sports broadcaster, and my guest has been former boxer Johnny Nelson. As you've already heard, one of the main themes from Johnny's story, from amateur to world champion, was the support and guidance of Brendan Ingle, his life coach. This episode of On the Sporting Couch was recorded before the death of Brendan Ingle, but we feel the programme is a fitting tribute to Brendan's considerable influence on the career of Johnny Nelson and several more top British boxers, especially from Sheffield. Our thoughts are with Brendan's family and close friends.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Cats and cat owners deserve better than any old-fashioned litter. That's why I teamed up with scientists and veterinarians to create Pretty Litter. Its innovative crystal formula has superior odor control and weighs up to 80% less than clay litter. Pretty Litter even monitors health by changing colors to help detect early signs of potential illness. It's the world's smartest kitty litter.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic-butter shrimp scampi. Mm. HelloFresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.